The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Hello and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Coming up later in the show, we'll be looking ahead to that massive game between Brentford and Fulham for a place in the Premier League. But we'll start by welcoming Jan Arfjordtoft, Mark Ogden and Craig Burley to talk about someone I feel we will be discussing a lot over the next few weeks, the future of Jadon Sancho. Mark on last week said 90% likely he will be a Manchester United player. Jan, do you agree?
Yes, I agree, because last summer that he was linked to a lot of English clubs and he was told that this season, do a good season for us, and wow, he has made a great season for Dortmund, and they are negotiating with him at the moment. There is no concrete offer on the table, but I think that he's most likely to leave before the deadline, and a lot of people talking about this deadline of 10th of August, because this is going to be the biggest transfer window of the history, but that's because Dortmund are going into the training camp and they want their squad together for that time, and Sancho could be out the next week.
Mark, can we just get this done tomorrow and then we don't have to faff around and go through all the normal things that we seem to go through with United?
Well, if this was Man City, Chelsea or Liverpool, it would have been done without a fuss, but obviously every time there's a Man United transfer saga, it runs on and on. We've had Bruno Fernandes went on for too long, Harry Maguire went on for too long, and United seem to start these negotiations with a low fee that they want to pay, haggle for about 3 or 4 weeks, and then pay what the asking price was in the first place. So I think that's what will happen on this one. I think that 10th of August, to me, does seem a little bit soon for the way that Man United operate, and it's a serious point that, you know, within the game, people look at Man United and regard them as being, well, I wouldn't say dysfunctional when it comes to getting transfers done, but they do take the time and they have a unique way of doing business, and it does take time, and you know, it will drag on. I'd be very surprised if it's done by the 10th of August. I hope it is, but I'd be very surprised.
Craig, I believe United got 66 points this season, matching their points total from the season before. How many more points will Jadon Sancho bring to the table?
That's the same question you asked me last week.
Well, I ask a lot of the same questions every week. This is what I do. What do you want me to ask you? How do you feel about the political situation in Europe?
Well, I had to have a chuckle when you said, I feel we're going to be talking a lot about Jadon Sancho in the coming weeks and months. Jesus, we haven't stopped talking about him in the last 3 or 4 months. Almost on a 2 or 3 times a week. You know, Jadon Sancho, what difference are going to make to Man United and all this sort of stuff? Will he leave Dortmund? Look, at the end of the day, if all parties are happy, and I mean by that, Dortmund get the money that they're after, the player gets his move, Solskjaer gets his man, then Jadon Sancho is going to give himself a great platform to go and showcase his talents at one of, not that Dortmund are not a huge club, they are, but United are a juggernaut around the world, just not in terms of their playing style at the moment, but they are a juggernaut in terms of their size. And he's going to improve them, and he's going to improve the squad. And, you know, it's probably going to mean that Mason Greenwood's going to miss out, or Marcus Rashford can have a rest, or Martial can have a rest, and Rashford can go through the middle. So it's about being able to rotate quality individuals in the final third. But I don't know what the budget is at United, Dan. A bit like Chelsea, they're still top-heavy in terms of buying players in the forward position. I know Chelsea are doing the same. And I think the 2 or 3 clubs in United are one of them that should be looking at the other end as well.
Well, that's where I was going to go with the next question, Mark, in the sense that if they get Sancho done, who else is on the radar? Do they still have funds to bring in people to add to the defence in the squad?
Well, we've been told for a while now that United will spend, but they won't be spending £100-150 million. It'll be a sensible transfer window. They get the big target done in Sancho, but yeah, they need defenders. I mean, the defensive record last year was better than it was, but they still haven't got a convincing centre-half. Now, you know, Chris Smalling's coming back this week from his long spell at Roma, and Smalling's had a fantastic year in Serie A. For me, they should keep Smalling. They've got a ready-made upgrade on Lindelof, Jones, Bailly, Twanzebe. There, he's had a great year in Roma, and he's kind of become a bit of a leader, and I think that that the time he spent in Serie A has made him a better defender. So United could save themselves a lot of money, a lot of trouble, by giving Smalling another chance. He only signed a contract 18 months ago, so it's not like he's heading out the door. But yeah, they need another midfielder, another defender. But like I say, if they want to be prudent, it makes sense to bring Smalling back.
And if you're looking to reinforce this Manchester United side, where do you start?
Well, they start with getting some people in that excite me. I just spoke to some people the other day, and they asked me the time when I was over there, what was the big difference between that team and the United team there is now? And I mean, then they had people that excited you. You wanted to see Manchester United play football. You wanted to see people take people on. And I think that is the main thing now with Sancho. A club like Manchester United need that kind of player, a player that gets the ball and people thinking, wow, something will go on now. They have now managed to get their own play. At the beginning of Solskjaer regime, they kind of react to other teams. Now they start acting, and to be fair to them, they got the third position. But I think there's a good start to make a statement now that we are a big club. Listen, the hottest property, the most expensive player in this transfer window, he went to Old Trafford. And I think that is a first sign. And I agree with the other boys. They need a defender. But there is a lot of clubs. What about Chelsea? Manchester City, they need great centre-halves.
And this,
well, they do need I mean, all these clubs are chasing centre halves. It's like the centre half, the quality centre half is fashionable now because they're all chasing that player. There's several clubs looking for good defenders. But I do think, and you're right, Jan, United in general terms have always had the players to excite, whether it be the Giggs of the world or the Cantonas, or players of that kind of help, but they've always had steel in the middle of the park and leadership, and I don't think they have that. I mean, Pogba, as talented as he is not a leader. Fernandes is a playmaker. McTominay is a young man who signed a new contract, but he's got a long way to go. Fred had a better season, but I don't think his leadership quality. And Nemanja Matic, he can maybe do it for, you know, 25, 30 games, but the legs are going to start to buckle. So I do think that is a position, if they're looking to improve and they're looking to peg back Man City and Liverpool, and ultimately that's what they're trying to do, I think they're lacking a bit of steel and leadership in the middle of the park.
United, meanwhile, of course, in Europa League action this week, Mark. They'll be fine, obviously, 5-0 up going into this second leg. Overall, how seriously are they going to take the competition?
I think they'll take it less seriously than they would have if they missed out on the Champions League. I think it's a chance for Solskjaer to rest his bigger players, because it is a short turnaround between now and the start of the new season. Each club's going to get 30 days, but still, you know, people like Rashford, Martial, Greenwood will need a break, because they played, look, a lot of them played a lot towards the end of the season. It came out with the same starting 11 for most games. So I think it'll be the likes of Mata, you know, maybe even Phil Jones if he can get fit, but people that you don't usually see that will play in the Europa League. But if they get to the final, Solskjaer would do well to get a trophy under his belt, you know, if you win your first trophy. So I think they will take it seriously if they get to the final. But in the meantime, I think the first couple of games, it'll be a fringe squad, shall we say.
Mark, just on that point, I may have been away on that day. 30 days they have. So, for example, if United make it through to the Europa League final, they will then have 30 days without any matches. Is that right?
Yeah. The Premier League have said that every club that has European commitments will get 30 days between the last game and the start of the season, so they will have a delayed start to the season. So theoretically, if they get to the Europa League final, or if City gets to the Champions League final, which I think is August 25th, 26th, they will have 30 days. So they could be starting the Premier League season 2 weeks, 3 weeks after everybody else, because they have to have a three-week rest period. So, yeah, it's going to make it for a very congested start to the season for some of these teams.
And that's going to be interesting, though, Craig, because if you're going to have 30 days off, regardless, why not just take this competition seriously, go on and win it, and as Mark said, get your first bit of silverware as a coach?
Yeah, I think you do either or, don't you? You just biff it off or you go all the way. I mean, obviously, clearly, with a 5-0 lead, they can pretty much do what they want in the first game in terms of the second leg. But, you know, we saw Arteta at the weekend lift a trophy. Both managers were going for the first trophy in fledgling managerial careers, but we saw what it meant to Arteta. That sort of question mark off his back in terms of a trophy. And for, you know, Solskjaer, it's the same. He was a little touchy at the end of the season after finishing third and had a little pop back. That's fair enough. And this will just give him some more ammunition. But yeah, I think they have to make a decision. If it was me, you know, from a playing perspective now, the season has dragged so long. I think I would want to end my season now as early as I can and then restart the season with everybody else at the same time. But we'll see what decision they make.
Jan, how would you feel if you were still playing?
Well, I didn't win a lot of trophies, so I would be desperate for a trophy, I guess. But when you see Manchester United, I think there's fair points that it's going to be a massive season for Manchester United and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer next season. They got to Champions League, as Mark said, which made it a bit easier to rest a bit now in the European League. But next season, when we played, we were told that Manchester United had a bad season when they were second in the league. So I think that next season, Ole Gunnar, is the most important season for him ever. He got to develop that play of his. And it's also got to get closer to Liverpool, closer to Manchester City. And by starting 2, 3, 4 rounds behind all the other teams in the Premiership, that could be decisive. You see six teams can get into the Champions League. You see there are big clubs in England. And every small inches of advantage, disadvantage, can more or less decide everything, more or less, you feel in England at the moment.
Go on, Mark.
I think that United should really go out to win this competition. I know what the guys are saying about wanting to rest up now and get the rest period, but I do think that for a club like Man United, it's now 3 years since they won a trophy. I think the Europa League was the last one they won under Mourinho. 3 years becomes 4 years, and the pressure of not winning something begins to weigh down on the players and the managers. So if they can get that first trophy won, and it's a big trophy, the Europa League, I think it's the biggest trophy that Solskjaer could have won this season, because you know it's bigger than the domestic cups. To win that, go into next season as trophy winners, potentially win the Super Cup as well, because the clubs now count everything. They count the charity, the Community Shield, they count the Super Cup, they count all these, which were previously kind of trinkets, these trophies didn't matter, they all count. And if United can get a trophy or two, it'll take the pressure off so much the younger players, because it's always a case of, have you won a trophy? Liverpool had it. Where's your trophies? Well, they won a trophy, and look at them now, that you know, the best team in England, maybe Europe, maybe the world. So winning trophies is important. You can't pass up an opportunity when they're three wins away from winning a big trophy.
Craig, you look a bit bemused. Is that just in
life? No, that's my normal look. I was only just because I was going to be a little sarcastic as normal and say I thought the way Solskjaer was talking when the season ended, they already had the trophy, which was third, basically.
Thank you. Now you've wound Jan up. Here he comes.
No. I'm not defending anyone, but it's a fair point, because some years ago there was a quite good manager, Arsene Wenger, who said to get into the Champions League was to win, like it was like winning a trophy, and he was a lot criticised for that. So it's fair what Mark is saying in terms of trophies, and I think you saw that in the weekend, how much that meant to Arsenal. And other players like Craig or Roy Keane, they could say it was only the FA Cup. But that habit of not winning, I mean, if you extend that over years, ask Tottenham how difficult that is.
So, Manchester United in action on Wednesday in the Europa League. That one of four matches on the Wednesday, then 24 hours. You have the four remaining matches as well as teams look to book a place in the quarterfinals.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang stole the show, didn't he, at Wembley. His two goals key to leading Arsenal to another FA Cup victory. His stats certainly speak for themselves. As Jan Craig's still with us, Xhaka joins the party as well. And you get to experience Xhaka, Jan's top five strikers in the world. get ready for this completely objective list. Jan?
Well, this was an easy list to make. I mean, I asked, is that number nine? Yes. So I took Cristiano Ronaldo and Messi out. They are gods, so they shouldn't be there. But the list is fantastic. And every list in the world got to be one Norwegian in, so you can wonder who I put on fifth position.
Okay.
If I can have a list, I can present it for the rest of the professors in the studio.
Let's take you through it then. You've got Lewandowski in at number one, Aubameyang at two, Benzema at three, Harry Kane four, and then, of course, Erling Haaland at number five. Aubameyang at two above Benzema. Let's start there, shall we, Jan?
Just going after stats, mate.
Oh, you can't just go after that. What a rubbish thing to say. You can't just go after stats.
70 goals for Arsenal. He's a fantastic player. This season didn't even play in his favourite position. Great striker. People think he's only a counter-striker. He can score in any position. Benzema just found himself now. Thank God for Real Madrid when Ronaldo left. So I put him in third place. In fifth place, I have, of course, Erling Haaland. His only competitor with him was Immobile, who has scored 36 goals in Serie A. It's not good enough. I have to have Erling Haaland in there.
So you've got...
Shut up, Dan. Shut up. What you got to understand, Jan, is he will always drag this Real Madrid thing up. What he doesn't understand, maybe he does, I don't know. You know, when you talk about Benzema and Aubameyang, you look at the supporting cast, and here's the deal. That's very important for a striker or a forward player. And clearly, Karim Benzema has got much better players around about him than Pierre Aubameyang. I mean, for goodness sake, they were sitting 10th in the table just before the end of the season. They managed to pop themselves up to 8th. But he's still been able to score goals. The one glaring thing I thought from the list when I looked at it, Jan, was Aguero. No Aguero.
Yeah, it could be, but I took him out. From his standards, if I made a list for the last 5-6 years, he would probably be up there. He still wouldn't beat Lewandowski. For me, it's Lewandowski, the reborn Marco van Basten, and that's the highest praise I can give to any striker. Aguero would have been up there if I said last 2-3 years, but I don't think he's been that fantastic this season.
Yeah, but did they ask you to do a list with the people that scored the most goals, or does the list ask you who is the top five strikers in the world at the moment? I mean, listen,
Craig Burley, you can never tell Pjotr to make a list and make rules for it. I will always do my own lists.
Shaka, Jan's got obviously Aubameyang above Harry Kane.
Yeah, and listen, I understand the sentiment around Aubameyang, especially now, but Aubameyang is not the finisher that Harry Kane is. And I think once you get past number one, I don't think anybody in their right mind would have Lewandowski in at number one.
He's not the finisher that, Harry Kane is. Have you seen the goals Aubameyang's been scoring? Let me finish.
Yeah, let me finish, Craig. Let me finish. Lewandowski is number one. I don't think that's debate. I still don't think Aubameyang is the finisher that Harry Kane is, or the finisher that Kun Aguero is, who hasn't even made the top five. What Aubameyang does have that nobody else on that list does is pace. And as a result, if you're looking for somebody with that pace to stretch defenses, according to how you're playing the supporting cast that I was just mentioned, then Aubameyang fits in, according to the system, better than Harry Kane or Kun Aguero or anybody else. I just feel that if we're talking about pure finishing, Harry Kane, Kun Aguero, a little bit better. You've seen Benzema adapt from being the supplier for Cristiano Ronaldo to leading the line without Cristiano Ronaldo. That shows an adaptability about his game as well.
I think that I just have to, not defending my list because this is the best list ever done on TV, but I will say that Harry Kane is the number nine that the manager will always pick in your team because he can keep the ball, he can score goals, he can win headers for you. He's a brilliant, brilliant striker. But as for today, I think that Aubameyang, if you look on his stats, not only the thing that he did in the FA Cup, just have a look at his stats. I think he's an underestimated striker in terms of goal scorer. And if a goal scorer, if a football striker like myself from 100 years ago will make a list, I will always look for goals. Always look
for Harry Kane's been injured this season, Jan. How can he get goals from the sidelines?
Yeah, but I still got him on the list, didn't I? I got him on the fourth position because I think he's a fantastic striker. And it's a striker a manager will always pick. I'll always try to have in your team. He would probably be one of the first ones on a team sheet because there's so much you can do with that kind of player. He can do a lot of things like Lewandowski can do as well. He can play as a number nine. He can play as a false number nine and that kind of stuff. But not having that Aubameyang is a bad goal getter. He's a fantastic goal getter. He showed that in Dortmund and he showed that in Arsenal. And as Craig was saying, it's harder to score goals for Arsenal than Real Madrid.
Oh, Mike. Well, then we'll put Danny Ings in then there. Because it's harder to score for Southampton, surely, than it is for Arsenal, if we're going to go down that route.
Listen, you just turn up all the clubs that you've worked at and have paid your wages, Real Madrid, Southampton. You got to give it a rest. Aubameyang is definitely underrated. I mean, you just take two finishes in the last...
So is he better than Harry Kane, Craig?
Well, would I take him over Harry Kane and long term? No, because he's 31.
So he's not?
Right. Sorry?
So he's not?
And the list was made in August 2020. I couldn't put Ferenc Puskas or Gerd Müller on the list, could I? I have to take who is the best in form now. Aubameyang is fantastic. Harry Kane is in there because he's a number nine that every manager would love to have in their team.
This is it. If we're in the playground and you're picking a team, who do you pick first, Aubameyang or Harry Kane? Now, well, at this moment.
At this moment, I would pick Aubameyang.
Would you?
At this moment. Look, here's the deal. You know, the top clubs will go after Kane before Aubameyang because Kane is what? I think it's 28 or thereabouts. He's in his prime. Aubameyang's 31. He's still doing the business, but the time is running out. So that's more of a short-termism. But let me go back to the point. He's finished, about his underrated finishing. He's finishing at the weekend with a little clip. But also the one in the semi-final with the ball that went into the back post and against City. The angle was completely against him. He went with the outside of his right boot and steered it in off the far post. I think he's really, really underrated. What's against him? He's in his 30s now. And that's a bit of a problem for him in terms of the decisions that he's going to have to make.
The Italian contingent are knocking at your door, Jan, and sending you abuse left, right and centre for just dismissing Ciro Immobile so easily, a man who, of course, matched the all-time scoring record in Italian football this season.
Amore, amore. He was a good candidate for my fifth position, but I had to go for a mother number nine, and Erling Haaland has been there this season, and... If Immobile will score 42, 43 next season, maybe got a chance to get on my list.
Wow. I like your list, Jan. Meanwhile, Craig, a lot of people have been messaging us, asking if you're going to publicly apologise to David Luiz, of course, key in Arsenal's success and lifting the FA Cup. Are you one of the harshest critics on him earlier on in the season?
And
they were wondering if you would like to backtrack somewhat.
No. Let me tell you about the FA Cup, as special as it is. It's not the be-all and end-all. It doesn't mean you're the real deal. It doesn't mean you're the best team. Little time ago, I think it was 2012 or 13, Wigan Athletic won the FA Cup, costing Roberto Mancini his job, and they were relegated from the Premier League that season. It doesn't mean everything's fixed. David Luiz, listen, I don't know, and there's not one person on our show that wasn't a critic of David Luiz, particularly how he started after the restart.
No, but just because everybody says it doesn't mean that it's right. You said it was a disgrace when he was giving a new contract. Yeah, he's done pretty well, hasn't he?
Oh, right, so pretty well's okay, yeah. Oh, well, let's... David's done pretty well, so that's it. That's all the problems at Arsenal over.
Oh, David Luiz... Craig, you have to give him that. He was good in the semi-final. He was man of the match. You have to give him that.
No, I did.
Agree?
And I did say before we started recording, when we were about to put up some stupid graphic, saying, how can we put up a graphic saying David Luiz is making more mistakes than he ever did when the guy's just played two or three of his better games? And I say that, inverted commas, better games. Just because a player doesn't make mistakes and sell the jerseys mean everything's rosy. He was better, but guess what? That's what they pay him to do. They pay him to defend.
Shaka?
Here's the thing, Dan. Well, first of all, if anybody's watched the show before, they know Craig's not going to apologise for anything, regardless of what it is and what he said. Secondly, David Luiz, as Craig was just alluding to, he's paid to play football for some, 40-odd games a season. If he has 15 atrocities, which he is more than capable of, and making some of the most basic errors, he's right to be criticised for those 15 errors, even if he has outstanding games in the semi-final and final. He is judged over the course of a season. He's been great to finish off this FA Cup final. Arsenal have lifted the title. He'll be praised for that. That's all well and good. But it doesn't negate some of the idiocy we've seen from him during the course of this season.
Be quiet. Yeah. And I said to you on Saturday when we were doing the broadcast, it was the perfect scenario for him because Olivier Giroud, who's, I'm not going to say he's a bad player because he's done some great things, but he's not going to run away from you. And that was the perfect scenario. And when people say, well, what was the difference between that and City? The difference was Arsenal were so deep against Man City because they were penned so far back. He didn't have to worry about any of that. So it was the perfect scenario, having a big physical striker that wasn't going to run in the channels. And so, therefore, that suited his game.
Is it all right for Jan to talk now, Craig? Is that okay?
If he's going to talk about Erling Haaland again.
No, but I'm just saying that sometimes you can't criticize David Luiz and even Mats Hummels. Everybody say he's a fantastic world-class defender. He's won the World Cup, but he's a bad defender. He's defending bad sometimes. And if it's deep or he would do his, then he will be good as well. So I can understand the argument, but I haven't been here so long, so I understand that Craig will never apologise. Fair enough, I learned that from Shaka today, so then we go back to Haaland.
No, Jan, that's wrong. That's wrong. I will always apologise when I'm wrong. The problem is...
You're never wrong.
Well, I never said it. Shaq?
Meanwhile, it is the richest game in football tomorrow. I'm trying to move on from Graves' stubborn ways. Tomorrow is the richest game in football. Brentford taking on Fulham at Wembley. This will be the third time that these two teams have met this season. Brentford winning both of those previous meetings. However, Fulham were in this situation 2 years ago and, of course, beat Aston Villa to book a place in the Premier League. This is what Tim Ream had to say looking ahead to the game.
It's going to be two footballing teams. They're a great attacking side, and we're the same. So it's going to be, I think it's going to be entertaining. It'll be back and forth, and we do have that experience on our side, but experience only counts for so much. And if you don't go out and do the job and perform, then it doesn't matter. And I think we've proven that 2 years ago that experience isn't everything. We're very, very much aware of that, and we've talked about it, and it's just a matter of us going out and doing what we do best, and the rest will take care of itself.
Right then, boys, let's get some predictions. Craig, let's start with you.
I'm going to go Brentford. Finished higher in the league. Kicking themselves, didn't get automatic. Liked how they came back against Cardiff after losing the first game and all the controversies about the non-VAR and the bad calls. Played some great stuff, particularly through Benrahma. So I'm going to go for Brentford. And what a story that would be for them to get to the Premier League.
Jan?
Yeah, fair points. And Brentford is a great story. And they're doing in the last game of their old stadium, going into a new stadium. Having said that, I think that culture and the way they have lost so many playoffs, they've been in it, was it 8 or 9 times they kind of lost in the playoffs. So I will go Fulham. I think that Fulham will go through.
Shaka, you have the deciding vote then.
I'm going Brentford here. I agree, Craig. I think they'd be very disappointed in losing to Stoke and Barnsley last two league games of the season. And then I think you saw some of that hangover in the first leg against Swansea. They turned it around. And when you compare that to what Fulham did in going to Cardiff and winning comfortably, and then I thought back on their own patch, they didn't look at all confident, despite that two-goal advantage. They got through, but I feel they're between the two more damaged goods. Brentford win it.
We'll be discussing that game, of course, at length on the next edition of the show. It is, of course, a game that you can see live on ESPN+. Kickoff is at 2:45 Eastern, but be sure to join Alexis for the pre-game show. She'll be joined by Jack Harrison, of course, of Leeds United. Plus, more from that Team Ream interview. And speaking of Team Ream, here is some of his answers in You Have to Answer.
Messi or Ronaldo?
Messi.
Brian McBride or Clint Dempsey?
Oh, come on. McBride.
How about this one? Christian Pulisic or Landon Donovan?
Christian.
Beat Brentford on Tuesday or play in the next World Cup?
Brentford on Tuesday.
Ooh.
More of that available, of course, tomorrow. Prefer Brentford to go up than play in the World Cup? He's towing the party line, isn't he, Shaka?
Yes, he is. You're only as good as your next game, I guess, and that is what's coming up for Tim Ream and Fulham. So maybe it's a little bit of a political answer. And the US are going to really have to shoot themselves in the foot to not qualify for 2022 after the debacle of 2018.
Jan, during your playoff final days, you would have taken Norway in the World Cup, wouldn't you, over promotion?
Well, there's some of us who can do both. it was a fantastic experience to be at Wembley doing that playoff final. Unfortunately, with Sheffield United, we were not that good prepared, and we lost to a good prepared Crystal Palace team. So we deserved lost the big million, billion kind of pound game.
How were your preparations, Jan, for that game?
Not very good, Dan. We had Howard Kendall, who sent us to Isle of Man. You know that famous fitness centre in the middle of the Irish Sea? It's fantastic. The kit manager asked us, should we bring any kit? Should we bring any footballs? And you know, he said, no, we will not do that.
What did you do instead, Jan?
We drank milk and sugar.
I tell you what, Dan, you got to watch these Scandinavians. They all talk about the British culture, but you got to watch these Norwegians and Danes and all these.
We had two Norwegians in that team at Isle of Man, and I was smuggling my training kit in my bag, and I went up to do a training. And normally when I went to pre-seasons with you guys, you did it the other way around. So stick to the Norwegian Vikings and you will win some battles, Craig.
That is it. Thank you very much, boys. So let's just take a look at the odds. Craig and Shaka going with the bookies. Brentford favourites to win promotion. Fulham slight outsiders to return to the Premier League. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Can't wait then for the Bundesliga to kick off on ESPN on September 18th. Of course, Bayern in action before then. Many fancy them to go all the way in the Champions League. If they do, they'll need Robert Lewandowski to continue his fine form. He spoke to Alexis Nunes. They did a live Instagram together. Here's a clip.
Who's the best footballer in the world right now?
Without me?
Best footballer ever to you?
Ever? Oh, I think so. Cristiano Ronaldo, Leo Messi.
Hardest opponent you've ever faced?
Sergio Ramos.
Funniest Bayern Munich player?
Alfonso Davies.
Oh, true. Who is your most stylish teammate?
Serge Gnabry and Jerome Boateng.
Who is most likely to forget their passport for a Champions League away game?
Kingsley Coman.
If you could eat one meal for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, one last question. If you could invite three people to dinner, who would you invite?
My wife and my kids.
Smart man. That way you can never get in trouble.
Be sure to join us on tomorrow's show, where we'll bring you more of that interview between Alexis and Robert Lewandowski. And just a reminder, if you ever miss a show, you can download our daily podcast, which is available over on the website.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And that brings us to the end of today's show. Don't forget that championship final tomorrow, live here on ESPN Plus. But for now, stay tuned for Extra Time with Jan and Shaq. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets. Jan and Shaq are with me, boys. Predict the Champions League finalists this season. We'll see how good or bad predictors Shaq and Jan will be. Jan, I'm going to start with you because Shaq won't remember the bracket, so we can have a look at that while you give us your answer.
Well, there's one part of it. We'll have all the big teams each other. So I would say Bayern Munich against Atletico Madrid.
Of course you'd say Bayern. And Bayern then obviously to win it, Jan, with your German ways.
No, we don't have to. Do you think that I'll only go for Norwegians and the Germans?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then I will think that Atletico Madrid will win that final. Finally, they'll win the Champions League final.
Oh, that'd be fun. Shaka?
So the bracket's already drawn. Is that the assumption here?
Yes, all the good teams are at the bottom, PSG and the other ones, Atalanta at the top.
Just agree with me.
I agree with Jan.
Oh, don't give us that, Shaka. PSG, Atalanta are in the top half. No? Right, good.
Well, they can't both go through, can they?
Oh, yes, I know, but then one of them will go...
I think Atalanta are going to beat PSG. Where else are you going?
What
else?
What about Atalanta? Are they going to win as well? So Atalanta are going to beat...
What did I say?
Yeah, I'm sure you said Atlanta. And Atalanta to beat PSG, and then...
I didn't say Atlanta. Don't be silly. Atalanta.
And then Atalanta will play, what, Atleti after they beat Leipzig?
Play Texas.
Yep.
Good, right. Oh, it's terrible television. Right, okay, yeah, and then... yeah, brilliant. Oh, God, can we edit that? Yeah, we'll edit that, don't worry. Who's in a worse situation? Mesut Ozil or Gareth Bale, Jan?
Wow, that's a good question, by the way. Gareth Bale seems very comfortable that he's playing Perez. He's just looking at his contract and think, well, they got to do something. They don't play me. I have to show all the body language in the world that I am not happy, but I'm still happy. So I would say that will be a draw because Özil as well, he seems very happy, congratulated his teammates, But I think that they should shop somehow now at the end of their careers. Great careers, by the way, the both of them. They should play football. So I'm not sure about who was best positioned for world stars as they used to be. They should play football.
Problem is, Shaq, no one's going to pay their wages anymore if they do move.
No, they won't. But between the two, I think Gareth Bale is in the better position in that whatever comes at the end of their respective contracts, I think there'll be a bigger queue for Gareth Bale, even at less wages. And at the same time, right now, and until that point comes, right now Gareth Bale has the escape of going and playing for Wales, which he thoroughly enjoys. Mesut Ozil doesn't have that escape himself in going back to represent the German national team. So between the two, I think Gareth Bale is the more comfortable.
Who is the most one-footed player you've ever played with? Yeah, Jan, how are you? Were you good with both feet for people who maybe didn't see you in black and white?
Or was I equally bad with both? When I was a kid, I had my dad always saying you have to train with your left foot. So I was more exact with my bad foot, but I had a better right foot. Of who I played with? It's got to be a guy, if you remember him, he played for Rapid Vienna and Werder Bremen and the Austrian national team, being the Israeli national coach till late he left, is Andreas Herzog, a very good player at his time, but he didn't have a right foot.
Shaka, how are you with both feet?
Oh no, my left foot was a walking stick. I could kick the ball with my left only if I hit it first time when the ball was rolling back to me. Anything other than that, I had to use my right. So you'd have done well to be worse with your left foot than me. Probably, if I'm thinking about it and just thinking quickly, I would maybe go Keith Gillespie up at Newcastle, but he played out on the right wing, never really had any reason to come inside on his left. He would just go down the line and cross. That's what he did all day, every day, and they did really well. So he could get away with it.
But it's interesting, Dan, that people who have so good left feet or left foot, they all often have a bad right foot. That is, it seems, and I'm not saying there is probably some science on this, but the people with the right foot sometimes have a better left foot, if you know what I mean. So growing up with Diego Maradona, watched him. I don't think he was the best player in his time. And I never saw him kick with a right foot, did we? Not many times.
When you think one-footed player, you just immediately think Iron Robin, don't you? And obviously left-footed as well. So it kind of springs to mind. Jan, will Leipzig get past Atletico Madrid? No. According to Jan, he's got Atleti winning it all in a thrilling 0-0 final penalty shootout.
Or not Ramos scoring in the last second this time against Atletico Madrid. Well, I think that Leipzig they are the challenges here. Atletico will be the favourite, of course, and losing Timo Werner as well. So I would think that Atletico Madrid will go through. I saw Nagelsmann say what we've done in Champions League today this year has been sensational. That seems as a bit that we are happy where we are. But to be an outsider is also a good position to be in. But I think Atletico Madrid will take that one.
Shaka, do you think Kepa deserves another season with a more strengthened defence? He had the third highest clean sheets last campaign after all.
Kepa hasn't filled me with any kind of confidence. If you're strengthening the defence, I still think you need to get a goalkeeper in behind.
Do you have any relevant stats about Kepa, Shang?
I quoted a stat last show as well, and you and Craig have not stopped reminding me about my one stat, so I'm not bringing up any more stats ever again. Ever.
We've never heard you quote stats in your life, Shang. This FA Cup final, you bring them out.
I bring out one stat. And you've not stopped talking about my one stat.
10 years, that's one more stat that I've ever heard you bring out, to be fair. It's because you're wearing a tie. When you're wearing a tie for FA Cup final, you got all smart on us.
It was amazing. It was an amazing stat, I thought. But I thought it was a really good stat.
Give us the stat again for people who didn't
see
it.
But I'm not going to repeat it.
No, go on, say it.
All right. Kepa, in all the goals he's conceded this season, 30% of them he didn't even move for. Which is ridiculous from a goalkeeping perspective. And that's me in the Goalkeepers Union.
It's a good stat. Great stat.
It's not bad, is it?
I thought it was a great stat, Jan.
Where did you take
more
that
for 30%. That's all kinds of wrong.
Shaka watched every goal that he's ever conceded and then came up with a formula to work that out.
And I counted.
Shaka? Yeah, right. You stole that from someone.
30% he didn't even move, Dan.
Yeah, apparently
Shaka,
so.
Shaka, how do you define movement?
Well, the opposite of Craig at last orders.
Yeah. I find when you move, that kind of negates it. If you dive, let's put it that way. If you dive.
Okay. Fair enough.
Should Angelino stay at Leipzig or go back to Man City, Jan?
Depends what Pep Guardiola have in line for him. I think he should stay in Leipzig because I think a lot of these players, they kind of need that extra year. He should stay there, do the same as Sancho did another year. I think that the timing now, when you see Sancho coming back to English football, it's perfect timing, and I don't think it's a perfect timing for the Leipzig player.
Shaka, is there even a 1% chance of Chelsea to make a comeback?
Oh, in the Champions League, you mean? Oh, no.
What do you think? In the FA Cup final? In the match that's played on Saturday?
There's 1% chance. Yeah, well, what made you talking about Leipzig? Now, all of a sudden, we're talking about Jadon Sancho, and all of a sudden, you throw this in. Give me some context.
We have mentioned Jadon Sancho.
There's a one... All right, never mind. There's a 1% chance just because, but let's be honest. You go with the 99. Still 99% Dortmund.
Yep.
Bayern Munich.
1% chance.
Bayern Munich. Stop confusing me.
But it's a bigger chance that Chelsea will win the FA Cup final this season than they will go through against Bayern Munich.
Shaka sweating up as always, which brings us to our next question. How's the AC coming, Shaka?
It's coming fine, except for when you, whenever you host, you make me turn it off.
Well, it's very loud.
Seb never does that, let me just say.
So we've gone from
nice
house AC
cool going Seb's here.
To your favourite holiday food, Shaka.
My favourite holiday food. Any seafood I'm going to go for.
What's your particular...
When you're on holiday, you have to have seafood.
What's your particular favourite, Shaka?
Anything, Dan.
Yeah?
Anything.
Bit of fish and chips.
Calamari. How about that? Let's just go calamari.
Calamari's a bit stringy.
I had a really good calamari in my wife and I went to Italy once. It was good. It's the best calamari I've ever had.
Oh, Gab says you ordered it wrong. Jan, what about you? Favourite holiday food?
I would go with fish. I'm a Norwegian, so fish we always love. But I also love Italy, so then I would go for a tagliatella salmona.
Oh, lovely. Jan, I saw a picture of you with a big fish. Did you catch that, or did somebody catch it and then give it to you to make you look like you did it?
Very good, Dan. That first of all, you're right. That was my brother-in-law who got that fish, and I got it on Twitter. Thank you.
There you are, you see. Take all the credit.
We were two families there. We were 9 persons. 8 got fish, and I didn't get one.
Well, there we go. Similar to your scoring record, really. Right, Jan, who was the best manager that you ever worked with?
Well, I got some bad ones.
We talked about Howard Kendall in the show and his preparation for the playoff final. Was you going to get drunk on the Isle of Man?
Kendall was a great manager. He was a great manager. But I also had... no, I won't say that. I think I got to go for my national coach, Egil Olsen, because he came on. I had 24 caps before he came on, and we never won anything, and we got qualified for the World Cup, small Norwegian team. And so I have to go for Egil Olsen, tactically brilliant at that time, and we were ahead of the time with our counter-attack. So I will go Egil Olsen as my favourite manager.
Shaka, you know when you're wiping yourself down, we can still see you. You're on camera when all that is going on. I know you're new to television.
Look, it's coming through my shirt now.
Hey,
your favourite food,
Dan.
Your calamari.
Did you see the picture of Frank topless, Shaka? I tell you what.
I know. He's inspired me to start working out.
Really?
On my back.
Really? Oh, your back?
With my back.
Yeah. Well, sweating out at least a bit. When it's safe to do so and stadiums open up one day in the future, what team's opening stadium atmosphere would you like to witness in person the most, Jan?
I will go for, I think, two stadiums. There are a lot of great stadiums, but I will always say to people that they, one, should go to Dortmund and see the Yellow Wall. They should see the 81,000 people and the 25-30 behind one of the goals. And I always felt when I was a player, and also when I go back as a journalist, that Anfield is unbelievable. And I think that Anfield now celebrating their Premier League trophy would be great to be a part of.
That's it. Should we keep going? Keep making Shaka suffer some more, or is that enough?
No. Let's go.
That's it. Gentlemen, thank you very much. ESPN
I'm
FC.
Hot and I'm sweaty.
Well, yes, we can see that, Shaq. You don't need us to tell that. That is it. We are off for the day. If you're listening to the podcast, you're very lucky you don't get to see Shaka in that state.